This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 20th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is The PC's Present Time Problem, The Body. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Morning. You had a lecture yesterday on level 3. Level 3 has to do with the reactive bank. Level 3 is subjective processing. Very, very important that you understand this level, but more material has been written on level 3 than on any other single item in the entirety of Dianetics and Scientology. It was the confusion, the upset of level 3, which first and foremost called our attention to the aberrant condition of man and to the various problems which he faced as an individual and therefore on all dynamics. We have already talked concerning the levels below 3, and we discover that in order to run level 3, we have to have an excellent orientation on the part of the preclear. Now, level 3 could be dedicated to the real present time problem of the preclear. And it will amaze you to know that the present time problem of the preclear is not his reactive bank. Present time problem of the preclear is not the fluctuation of pounds sterling or dollars tin on the world financial market. The present time problem of the preclear is not, will Sadie marry me? The present time problem of the preclear is not the I Will Arise Society is making vast inroads upon the I Will Not Arise Society. These are not his present time problems. He'll tell you so. He'll say, you got any present time problems? He'll say, yeah. And you say, what? This character then tells you. This guy then tells you. Well, I'm overdrawn slightly at the bank. This is his present time problem? No. Of course, you're a good fellow. You're a good fellow. You're nice. You say, well, that's fine. How could you tackle it? How could you do something about it? Some such phraseology. You might even ask him where it is. You might even go so far as, if it were resistant, to ask him to imagine a problem of comparable magnitude and then ask him how he'd tackle that one. And when he can tackle that one successfully, then bring him back and have him tackle the actual problem. This gets his auditing on the road. But, this is not the present time problem of the preclear. This is a bit of meringue which has dripped off the plate onto the carpet. That's all. Present time preclear problem is a body. And that is his present time problem. And this body is fully equipped with a reactive bank, and that is the body's present time problem. The reactive bank of the body is not the present time problem of the preclear. And that is what has made level 3 so utterly and completely deceptive. This is why level 3 has been so resistant. Let us take up the problem of ownership. If you can establish proper ownership of any item, it will vanish. If you can establish the proper ownership of any consideration, it will vanish. How do you run ownership processing? I refer you to the PABs, the crudest way to run it. You get the idea, you own it, that your body owns it, that your body's pictures own it, that your body's pictures own your body, that the problem belongs to you, that the problem belongs to the body. Anything of this character, of course, will, as is this material. But that is a poor process. It's not a bad process, but a poor process, because it does not give the preclear power of choice. It overrides power of choice. If you ran the process this way, you'd probably get a lot further. You could say to him, who do you suppose owns it? Who do you think owns it? What do you think owns it? See? And this restores some degree of power of choice. But what do you know? Some people are in such foul human condition that they are not at any time capable of this much power of choice. And they'll say, very intelligently, as they look at you, they'll say, huh? Ownership, let's see. Who owns it? Let's see. You think, well, they're scrounging around, you know, trying to find somebody who owns it. That's not the case. Try to figure out what your auditing command was. Trying to figure out the Korzybski's of the word ownership. Isn't it funny that the word semantic is so close to somatic? Anyhow, when we have a preclear doing this, actually it's a mistake to run this ownership processing on him at all. If we have to overcome the preclear's power of choice in order to run ownership processing, we are then and there possessed of a preclear, and we should recognize it very clearly, who is not capable of running ownership processing. Funny part of it is that it will work on him. Now that's what's idiotic. But it doesn't do him any good. Matter of fact, reduces his power of choice. You say, get the idea your body owns it, and get the idea your pictures own it, and your pictures, it owns your pictures, and so on. If you had to do that, you shouldn't have been running it. See, tests demonstrate this. Yet this is a process which belongs in level 3 and is a fascinating thing. You can have preclear owning various parts of the problem, you know, get it running ownership processing on parts of the problem or all of the problem, and as-ising various factors connected with the problem. And this is fine. This is fine. But if you have to tell him to get the idea of who owns it, you know, get the idea about it and so on, you shouldn't have been running it. If you can't run this command on him, who do you suppose owns it? And he can't grasp that, then he is in poor condition. Well, if we look this problem of ownership over, we discover at once that there is one very large misownership sitting right there in front of you in your presence, a body. And that is an interesting fact, because it's a problem in misownership. He says, this body, says the preclear, is I. This body is me. This body is my name. This body, see, only he doesn't put it that way. He said, I don't feel well today. Get the idea? My face, he says, feels hot. Yeah. My leg has pain in it. I have a pain in my leg. I have a muzzy feeling in my skull. See? And that's a continual parade of misownership. And thetans have long since recognized this as being for the birds. So you know what they've done. They say you shouldn't speak about yourself all the time. It's impolite, and they invented a lot of other reasons. The basic reason why they object to people using the first person singular is that it's a misownership, and they know that it gets you in trouble. They're trying to help you out. Funny part of it is almost all the mores which exist in the race are an effort to assist you. This is very funny, but we look at them as an effort to knock us for a loop. They say, why don't you make nothing out of yourself? I'm going to be nice to you and make nothing out of you. I'm doing the best thing I can for you. You're a jerk. You're stupid. You're no good. You should be cut down to size and so forth. Well, the guy's trying to exteriorize you and get rid of your present time problem. The actual basic motive on all these things is one of the most interesting philosophic excursions which you ever wish to take. What is the actual motive, knowing Scientology? What is the actual motive? Insults and taxation and automobile accidents and stupidities and blunders and so on. The actual motives of these things become very curious. Now, actually, the body is helping you out all the time, too. See, just like the government tries to help you exteriorize by making nothing out of all your mess with taxation, you know, so does the body help you out by giving you a terminal for people to talk to. Isn't that nice? It gives you a terminal, and you're visible, and you become known, and your communication becomes much better. And when the body fails of this purpose, it tries to make more terminal, and that is the reactive mind. Now, just in case that one went by too quick, let's take a look at it now. The body is trying to assist you to be a nice, visible terminal. You have really a hard time talking to people when they don't know who they're talking to and so on. My problems of trying to learn how to squeak louder in open space are interesting because there's no terminal for anybody to squeak back at. I was 3 feet back of Don's head the other day, several thousand miles away. He was being very stupid about the whole thing. I mean, I burned a hole in his shoulder slightly and tried to attract his attention one way or the other, but he was fairly sure there was no terminal there. See? So I says, ho-hum. Went down, looked at the book inventory, and came home. You know? But, you know, not anybody in that office, and these people are all very good friends of mine, you see. All very good friends of ours. And not a single one said, hello, Ron. Not one. Now, there's a bit of tumult in Australia, new frontier lands, when they are denied the flagrant use of pistols and so on. They are liable to resort to mere confusion. And the Australian scene, as usual, is a little bit tumultuous. Nothing very terrific. But all I'd have to do, actually, is talk to these fellows. I know where they've gotten to. Some rag has published a story about one of the auditors down there, and it's upset people. Bit of N theta, you know? And this auditor was stupid enough to disobey the code of the Scientologist, and he let his fellow auditors down. He disobeyed the code of the Scientologist and gave a newspaper interview, and he gave a nice interview. There was nothing wrong with it because newspapers can't duplicate, and they're not a communication system. They're a miscommunication system. And the other artist got upset with him, and so they're arguing back and forth about who's processing who, and somebody has consented to be processed, and, you know, this kind of an interbulence, by the way, could be expected after somebody has let down his fellow players, see? I mean, here, the rest of the team wasn't there while this guy was given this newspaper interview. That is to say, he wasn't thinking about anybody but himself. And then all of a sudden, every auditor in the place is smacked flat by this violently vile, untruthful story in a magazine or a newspaper called Truth. And every letter I get from Australia, just currently, is quite interestingly and entertainingly spells this truth. And, well, there's an interbulence, see? And actually, all that'd be necessary is just to get the boys to talk this over. And this one guy that did this thing, all he did was give a newspaper interview. But get him to say he was sorry, and he'd try to make amends for it, and just damp the turbulence out and let's get a show on the road. In other words, I'd very much like to talk to these fellows. See, I'd very much like to talk to them. Now, I was looking at one of them, the worst offender, the other day, and he didn't say hello or anything. Get the idea? Actually, I was more there and more alive, you understand, than when I monkey it around with a body. But there was no visibility. See, I was out of agreement. Follow this? So, the body's trying to help you out. It's giving you something for people to talk at, see? And people feel comfortable when they see a body. They see this guy, he's got two arms and two heads just like me, and there he is, and I can talk to him. I know to whom I am speaking. You see, I have comfortable reality here. And this is fine. And a body is not a problem as far as that's concerned. But a body becomes a care by marrying one to the economic world, because a body has to be fed, clothed, and sheltered. It has to be cared for. You can't leave it out in the damp. You leave it down in the railroad yard for a couple of hours, lying across a slag heap of old coal or something, and so on. You pick it up, and it's all dirty, and you have to send it to the cleaners. And in order to have its clothes cleaned, you have to have so many pence, pounds, Krobotniks, or marks, you know? And in order to have it, give it a bath, you usually have to have a room and a bath, or you have to have a few pence in order to go into a place that sells baths, at least, to clean this body up. It doesn't automatically brush itself off, you know? So it marries one into the economic system. And the economic system is not necessarily a communication system. All of the government, again, could be figured out to be doing you a big favor by making money scarce and so forth. See? Make you work harder, make you more interested in life. So here we have this body operating first as a terminal and then in less optimum condition as something that connects one over and above his power of choice, you see, to an enormous number of communication lines. It connects one to too many communication lines very often. But what happens to this body? What happens to this body? And how does it really start letting you, a Thetan, down? How does it start letting you down? It's when it has not served its purpose properly. It has not served its purpose properly as a communication terminal. Got it? That's when it has let you down. And at that moment, it starts picking up a reactive bank. It's an apology for having done so. No thinkingness about this. It just starts to pick up these things. Now, if it consistently and continually lets you down across a long period of time, it will gather ridges. It will try to become more a terminal. And the only thing really wrong with the body is that it insists that if it wasn't talked to for you, it then must be, perforce, too small or too invisible or insufficiently this and that. And so it tries to be, for you, interesting. And it has various definitions of what's interesting. I call your attention to some beggars I have seen from time to time, and I'm sure you have seen from time to time. And they have an idea of what's interesting, running sores and missing legs, you know. You say, no. Well, they think that's interesting, and sure enough, they do get a few coppers. Matter of fact, beggars in some parts of the world cultivate diseases, sores, withered limbs. They manufacture these things. In children and so on, just in a frantic effort to make that body a good communication terminal. Now, we don't see any real villainy in this. No real villainy. It's an effort to be interesting. We have a process which is the lower harmonic of level 3, and it is a two-way communication process. Now, you can run any kind of a process on two-way communication. You can take any type of auditing thought or command or computation, and by phrasing it on a very calculatingly careful basis and keeping it off of a steady duplication, we can talk about it to the preclear. And talking about this, we get running it with two-way communication. We don't mean then auditing it on a level 3 repetitive duplicate command basis. See? Tell me an idea you haven't had today. Tell me another idea you haven't had today. Tell me another idea you haven't had today. See, would be the level 3 method of running it. And you'd say to somebody, is there any time today you haven't been having ideas? And you'd talk about it. See? Got it? All right. The entire subject of communication is quite interesting in this regard, that an effort to have communication, an effort to provide thought to be necessary elements of the communication formula, is the prime motive behind all shapes, forms, behavior, significances, and conditions. If you look at life that way, all of a sudden, a great deal of understanding will dawn, if it hasn't already. Fellow's going down the road and he's going glumpity-glump, and we look for the deep significance of this and so forth, and the reactive bank says the real significance of this is that he is a, let's say one has had training in some old-time thing. He is possessed of genies, and this is what's making him go glumpity-glump that way, you know. And he is actually being monitored at a distance by the I Will Arise Society or something, you know. And get, you know, big significance. Well, that is a low-order compartmentation of the actual reason. The low-order compartmentation runs in a very complicated way. The engram phrase. He is as he is because of the engram phrase. Actually, that's a nearer reason than people had before. See? But what about a more sweepingly basic reason, a more basic reason than this? Well, the one that's closer to understanding would have to do with understanding it with communication or by communication or through communication, naturally, because of the ARC triangle. All right, we say then he is doing this in an effort to have communication. Yet we've seen men back up from the fire with great speed. He's trying to save the mock-up. It's all the way you look at it. But he's trying to save the mock-up so he can have further communication. He actually is not expressing a non-communication with the fire. He seems to be. But he knows that if he goes poof, the ardors of getting a new mock-up are such that he would be out of communication for some little time. He doesn't want to be out of communication here, there, and every place else, so he doesn't burn himself up. It is not, however, that he is completely allergic to the idea of being burned up. Some Thetan looks this over and he says, you know, that is not a bad idea to drop a mock-up in a fire. That'd certainly make things interesting and maybe make the kids laugh like hell. But it'd be an interesting thing to do. But I'm short of terminals. I'd better stay away from that fire. See? All right. Some squirrel is going around in small circles and he's writing off of an engramic command that says I must criticize or something, and he's just writing, you know. And if he'd happened to gotten himself associated with Tum Biscuits or something like that, he'd be criticizing Tum Biscuits. If he'd gotten himself associated with the Navy, he'd be criticizing the Navy. And if he'd gotten himself associated with the an office that sells peanuts by the shipload or something, he'd be criticizing that. In other words, that's just the way he goes, you know. And he gets in our midst and he must criticize, so he goes yappity, 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 yap. But the funny part of it is, he doesn't think there's an intention there, so he's trying to give us an intention. And he knows an intention is necessary for communication, so he discusses an imagined intention. Now, this is wild, but you look this over, you look at these squirrels, and they're just dreaming up wild intentions. They can't conceive of the intention we have because it doesn't lend to communication as far as they're concerned. They have to get a communication intention which they conceive to be fit for communication. Now we go into acceptance level and so on. Their idea of what is a good discussable intention. What is an acceptable intention? How could they go about playing a game with us, in other words? And they would say immediately, well, it has to be a bad intention. And if it's a bad intention, why, then, of course, I can play a game with them. And so they just work like mad to make players out of us, you see. So that they can have some communication. which is real funny, because none of these people have any least idea what anyone's intentions are. You can stand right in front of one of these people and say, my intentions are to train a number of auditors in my area so that we could put together a clinic and with a little bit of procurement line, start to make people well. And you say, that's my intention. And they'll stand right in front of you, and they'll go figure. See? You get the idea? And then say finally, probably train a number of auditors. Probably not really training the auditors. Real intention there is probably something different. Now, they don't have imagination enough, maybe, to really imagine a fine, feathered intention, such as the overthrow of the North Korean government, you know? He's training, you know. And he doesn't have enough intent to make it real romantic and real ratsy, because this is above his level of acceptance, you know. Actually, he's looking and he finds a no intention, and he says, this is intolerable. Maybe there's no terminals there, and therefore no intention, no communication. And maybe there's no intention, because all these good intentions are probably impossible, and nobody can discuss them anyway. So let's put an intention there, for heaven's sakes, you know. And then we can talk about it and talk with them and everything. So we'll have the intention that they're really doing this because there's a big scarcity of sex and they want to rape all the women in town. Yeah, that's a good intention. Yeah, well, that's discussable, see? And they'll suddenly lay this intention on you. There you are sitting there with this. You say, well, this is the nuttiest thing I ever heard of, see? Nuttiest thing. Well, what do you know? You're discussing on that line. It worked to some degree. You wouldn't talk to them. You would not talk to them. You see? And if you wouldn't talk to them, they forced you to talk to them. They gave you an intention which you then had to discuss. You get the idea? Actually, the number of motives which such people have are very close to zero. Very, very close to zero, because they're not very active communicators, oddly enough. You hear them mostly because they upset you. But the world at large does not hear them. The communication line which they're writing on is your communication line. They're the static on the communication line. They can't be on your communication line. It's not part of their communication. So their effort to have communication is to put a few burrs and scratches and yeeks on your actual signal. And this is parasitic communication. And where people are unable themselves to communicate, they start mocking up intentions toward the two terminals that are communicating. They start throwing things around so that they can participate in the communication too, but of course usually the best they can do is a parasitic communication. It's quite an interesting fact. Now, all of these principles are extremely usable, but individuals will try to remedy the scarcity of any part of the communication formula by any way, shape, or form that they can. An aberration comes in when they try too hard. All you have to do is remedy some part of the communication formula too hard, and you got aberration. See, you conceive it's missing, maybe it isn't. And you decide to remedy it, maybe you didn't have to. You got it? And then you assign a value different than the actual communication value, and you've got an aberration, full blown. Very easy to understand this. Here's the reactive bank. It is there in an effort to make the communication terminal communicate more. Makes it communicate with the past and the future and so forth. It is complicated by the fact that some of its apparent activities are actually the activities of the machinery of you, a Thetan. See? So actually not all of the activities of the reactive bank are the activities of the body terminal. They may be your activities as a Thetan. And in each case, an effort is being made to remedy the lack of a terminal which you, a Thetan, have. And one of those lacks is a terminal. And so you get your own machinery going in such a way to stack up energy on you. And when it's stacked up thick enough and heavy enough, why, the idea is it'll be visible. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You'd have a terminal. Kind of a crude way to make one. All right. Now, the present time problem is a body which has failed too often as a communication terminal and which is supplying miscommunication in an effort to be more of a terminal. And it conceives itself that it isn't big enough and it isn't chunky enough to command attention and stop light waves or something, and so furnish an interest point on the communication line. And so it tries to tailor itself up in different ways and manners to make itself far more interesting. This makes a pain no less painful. This makes an aberration no less an aberration. And the body, however, has an autonomy in this activity to which a Thetan objects. And the more he tries to restrain this autonomy, the worse the reactive bank gets. The reactive bank of the body is possessed kind of a belief that it must be getting criticized. And therefore, it must do something different and more commanding of communication. Now, when you say command respect, when you say command attention, when you say command interest, and so forth, you are simply saying command communication. And if you translate these various things over to command more communication, why, you will be able to work out a great many little riddles of human behavior and activity which seem to be puzzling before. The man doesn't throw himself in the fire because he wants a communication terminal. Not because, as the physiologist, let's not dignify them by calling them psychologies, the physiologist studying in the field of the mind believed that the instinctive reaction to pain was the sole cause of people yanking themselves away from pain. And they put it all onto an instinct and made it all indefinite, you see. You know, they say a man has an instinctive dislike for pain. If he has such an instinctive dislike for pain, why is it that a Thetan is always standing gloatingly over some body in agony? Saying, well, now, maybe I can do something about this as a good alibi, but as a matter of fact, man, look at that sensation. Here I've been kicking around in space for the last 280 years, and I haven't really been convinced that there was anything to look at all. And look at that body right. Now, this may be antipathetic to you, but if you want a proof of this, there is a process which is quite interesting that does a neat proof on it. You have a Thetan waist pain. You just have your preclear waist pain in brackets, and you have him waist pain in brackets for a while, and all of a sudden he will say, pain. You know, pain's a difficult subject, because if you have too much pain, you can't have any communication at all. You have distraction. If you have just enough pain, you have communication. The problem of most bodies in terms of psychosomatic illness is having just enough pain. And they manage to monitor this very easily. There isn't any question of tolerance for pain. What is just enough pain? It's enough pain not to entirely immobilize one or interrupt his goals, but to command interest in communication during moments when no communication from other live terminals is possible. Fills in the breaks. So that you could say that an individual who's been alone too long would finally have a great deal of somatic. He's trying hard to get enough subcommunication in this form. Follow me? Yeah. Well, we haven't any real quarrel with the body, you see. It's trying to perform its job. If we have different ideas as to what is communication, if we have different, markedly different ideas, we have the difficulties of agreement. And when nobody has any agreement on what is good communication or communication ability, then, if you please, he makes some wild tries. There was a cavalry officer once who had an idea that he must be out of communication. He'd been a general hero. He'd been a hero of a war. He was known as the boy general. He was a fabulous character, and after the war was over, and after the fight was won, they retired him from service. No communication. He went back to a quiet town. He sat there. He didn't have anything to talk about. A lot of his old cronies had drifted, and they'd fight the war all over again, but that wasn't communication. Not the way his taste had been cultivated. And so he moved hell and earth. He couldn't say heaven and earth and still speak of a war department or war ministry. He moved hell and earth to get himself back on active duty, and they sent him back on active duty. And he got into an area where the tribes were a little bit upset. And this character was trying too hard. He'd been out of communication for a while. He lost his communication. He was trying too hard, and he wanted to make a big go for it, you see, a big stab at it. He wanted to provide communication there, which would really be communication. He went off on a couple of campaigns. First of these campaigns, mild amount of communication resulting from the thing, but not enough. And his aberration, now, he was just trying too hard to be communication terminal. And so he set his command on a hilltop, and he got about 7,000 tribesmen firing at him and 300 cavalrymen, and he got himself massacred most gorgeously through a series of tactical blunders that a child out of West Point would never have made. Tactical blunders from A to Izzard. You say nobody could be this crazy. He walked himself into a perfect position. He sent out no forward scouts. He didn't estimate the enemy. He didn't scout his position. He didn't make sure of any reinforcements. He didn't even know whether he had any communication lines back to the main command. He knew nothing. He established nothing. He all of a sudden, with 300 cavalrymen, attacks head-on about 7,000 fully armed, very able warriors. Of course, he got himself wiped out. People are still talking about this character, so he wasn't a total failure. But I'm ruining him now by omitting his name. See? Because he was a problem in miscommunication. You see, he'd been without communication for a long time, and he's got to make a big try for it. Now I don't know what communication became to him finally, but probably a bullet. The oddity was that the tribesmen respected him and wouldn't kill him. He had to blow out his own brains with all of his men dead around him. Fantastic story. How a man with as brilliant a career as this could suddenly turn up as a little bit worse than a plebe at the military academy is a huge mystery. Unless you know about communication. What the devil possessed this man? Well, if you find out a game is a game, and an individual is going ahead and playing the game, and so forth, that's all right. But remember, this game is played with communication. And where an individual's had a tremendous scarcity of communication, he then and there has this terrible thing occur to him that afterwards he tries too hard along the lines of communication, and he doesn't believe the communication he actually gets, and he doesn't think the communication which is actually available will surfeit his demand for communication. This is what happens. And when a body gets aberrated, it has simply gone on that channel, and there's no other channel for it to go on. I'm very sorry that we could add a tremendous number of significances to the whole thing, but when we deal with this in a finite echelon, we discover that all that's wrong with any preclear is that he hasn't had enough communication. Simple. And you say, but yes, this fellow is flinching back from this horrible, incipient gout. Sure, he's flinching back just enough. He went down to the pub one day, and his cronies were sitting around, and they didn't pay any attention to him. Nobody even said hello. They were absorbed in something else. He felt lonesome that day. If he'd gone any other day, it might have been all right, but that day it made an effect on him. They didn't talk to him. Nobody talked to him. So he said, I am not a terminal. I wonder what their idea of a terminal is. And unfortunately, in the conversation, one of them said, well, you take the squire's gout. So he says, you know, that's a terminal. People talk to or about gout. A week or so later, he's down with gout. He himself, of course, doesn't remember where he heard about gout. But he's got a terminal he thinks is acceptable. And they say down there at the pub, they say, I wonder where the major is. Oh, he's got gout, haven't you heard? They're at least talking about him. Finally, one or two of them drift around while he's sitting there in an armchair with his foot propped up, and they say, well, how are you? How you doing? A little law comes in here. If you can't be talked to, at least be talked about. Got it? So the fellow who rides to his death realizes he can't be talked to, but he thinks, well, I can be talked about anyhow. Get the idea? He's talked about now because he has gout. Maybe the people who came to see him came very rarely. He really cut his communication lines. He doesn't get down to the pub anymore. He doesn't talk to people anymore worth a nickel. But he knows he's being talked about. Poor old Major, there he is up there. He just... living too high, I guess, and he got all this gout. Gout has now become less fashionable. Gout is not something people talk about as much, and it isn't around. It's hardly anybody gets gout anymore. Fascinating, isn't it? Fashionable subjects of conversation. And under that topic, you get epidemics. Poliomyelitis became fashionable because the president of the country had it. And it is growing so fast that it has increased 500 to 700% in the last 12 months, in spite of the fact that a new serum to kill it forever has been invented. The real disgrace of sock polio vaccine is not that it was balled up and held back from manufacture and caused a few cases. That is not its disgrace. The disgrace is that the publicity resulting therefrom, you see, brought about a misidea, you might say, in the interest of keeping a society going, as to what was a good communication terminal. It's a child with poliomyelitis. He can't be talked to, so he can be talked about. We wonder why children get ill. Why do children get ill all the time? Why do they get sick? Well, they're trying to create in themselves at least something to be talked about. There's got to be some communication around here someplace. Now, it isn't that the communication is necessary to as is the ridges which they've accumulated through a lack of it. I want you to get that very plainly, because most of you have that idea as an auditor. But the communication is there to as is the terminals which have accumulated too much mass. And that the Thetan wants communication to as is these terminals or some such thing. That is not what this is all about. There's more mass accumulating, so it'll be more of a terminal. And when a child comes down consistently with poliomyelitis, measles, scarlet fever, whooping cough, and so forth, we can immediately assume that he has not been talked to enough. That's what we assume. And so he's fixing himself up so he'll be talked about. He's going to make an effect. Why does he want to make an effect? Communication. Now, I went into this one time, collected a few case histories. Fascinating case histories. Fascinating. One of these case histories had to do with a little boy who got along fine, didn't really have a sick moment until he was about 4.5 years of age. He was raised in a rather large family. Noise, commotion, confusion, and people were always coming around saying hello to him, you know, and he was saying hello to people, and he didn't get kicked in the teeth all the time. He was just get along fine. And all of a sudden, his parents went some distance away to a very quiet place where they knew nobody. And from 4.5 to 6, when was the next time he connected with a family, and his own family, you might say, and was getting talked to again, from 4.5 to 6, you never saw such a parade of illnesses in your life. It was just one thing after another. Now, we run these things out as engrams. We find out they surrender very poorly. Why do they surrender poorly? The individual is not sure that a communication can exist. So he at least wants something there to talk about. He's at least got the engram of the illness left. He could probably turn it on again with the greatest of ease. It's a hard job getting sick, you know? And every once in a while, a thetan trying to do one thing overshoots and miscalculates. And he gets too sick. And that's a mistake. And then's when he comes to you and says, hey, give me a hand. I skidded. The idea? He put himself too far out of communication in an effort to be talked about. He too greatly immobilized his terminal. He can't get it around enough. He's overshot. He's tried too hard. Like the boy general that gets himself and his troops slaughtered on a hill top. He's standing up there listening to the Redskins screaming, and he's saying, I'm not sure that I want to be talked about in this fashion. One of the most terrible things that can happen to anybody is to go too far and then find out he can still communicate. That's a very rough thing to do. People, to a large degree, bring their own ills upon themselves, to a large degree. But they are assisted, and the whole thing is compounded by the assistance of others, who, of course, want a nice sick terminal, too, to talk about. And so people misintend various things one way or the other, and they get things cluttered up and upset. But to understand the motives of someone, you'd have to understand not only the motives of his body, but the motives of all other persons with whom he has associated with regard to him and his motives with regard to them. And so we get this interplay. And the way we would analyze this would be desire for communication, and then we would write desire for communication, and then we'd have one little tail going up, and opposite that line at the end of it, we would have desire fulfilled, and another little tail going down from the line, desire for communication. And this would be desire unfulfilled, and we would classify then the rest of this behavior under these two headings, and we'd split these headings up and so forth, and we'd have a philosophic machine which would analyze personal and human relations. They'd all be analyzed on the basis of too much or too little communication. We ourselves recognize rather clearly, as far as our motives are concerned, these motives may or may not be exact as I state them. But it may be that a great many of us have looked around in society and recognized something very interesting about this society, that it has tried too hard to be individually interesting, so that it has, to a marked degree, dropped out of communication with itself. It is not in good communication at this time on the third dynamic. There's been a solidly recognizable communication break on the third dynamic. More machines we get, the more debility we get, the more individual privacy we run into, you know, more seclusion, why, the further out of communication we are. Do you know, once upon a time, if you were to take a buggy and an old nag and have gone from here to a town in the north, Boy, he would have been talking half of the way. See, he would have been talking to the guy riding the hayrick, and you would have been talking to the fellow walking along, and you would... Conversation, you know? Communication. You were traveling fairly slow. People on foot could have walked alongside of you and talked to you. You were making so little speed that you didn't mind stopping. The difference between an old nag pulling a rig of one kind or another and an old nag stopped was so imperceptibly the same that you'd just as soon stop. Furthermore, you'd see people going your way and carrying a bundle or something. You'd say, throw it in the rig. Come up here. And the guy'd sit down. Well, where are you going? Well, my name's Jinx. I work over here someplace or another. How you doing? That's a nice nag you got there, you know. Conversation pieces would immediately show up. The surrounding countryside, their personal possessions, their motives, a new song, somebody else, you know, this sort of thing. Would have been a continuous stream of communication. Now you jump in your car now and drive to a small town in the north. And I will give you, with no reservation, a £5 note for every person that you will talk to between leaving and arriving. And I probably would only be cost about £10. You probably had to stop twice for gas. See? So we get into sort of an idea that communication's non-optimum. Well, we are being fought by, in this effort, a terrifically over-evaluated effort and over-trying on the part of machinery, advertising. Now, you take these advertising agencies down here, they're working day and night to throw up people out of communication with people, only they don't recognize it this way. They're just trying to be talked about. These TV sets that are on yappity, 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 yap are the most interesting thing you ever saw. You used to be able to go over to somebody's house for a sociable evening. You'd sit around and chew the fat and discuss and throw away various items and objects about life in general. Now you go over next door and they've got a program on and they're all sitting there in the half light with the screen bright and they are, you know, everybody's looking at this thing. And the horrible part of it is that the actors on that screen are not there. They are not there to receive any plaudit or communication from you. So communication must be considered to be so impossible now that one is starting to communicate with the terminal, not the live object or being, see. He's starting to communicate with the terminal, and he thinks this is communication. Well, it's all right if he considers it's communication, but it's, looking at a TV set is something like sitting down and inspecting your engram bank. You see why? I mean, there's no live terminals in it. It's just pictures. Well, that's better than nothing. Better not having any engram bank. But I'll tell you something that's much better is to have a live terminal. And then yourself be sufficiently adjusted with regard to receiving and giving communication that you don't now start playing the game, the only really fatal game in the entire society. The most interesting thing to do is to hold myself out of communication. The executive with the tremendous office and the much more sizable waiting room who keeps you sitting out there, not because he's busy, not because he is involved in appointment, but just keeps you sitting out there to impress you how important he must be. The dumb fool. See what a dopey thing he's doing? He's cutting his communication lines in an effort to have more communication at a different strata, see, and with a different terminal approach. Such a man must perforce feel a great inadequacy in himself. He must believe that he would have to at least have 3.5 heads in order to be talked to at all. You see, if his computation is, if I am very, very, very important to all of my clients, therefore they will talk to me. So the best thing to do in order to accomplish this is not to let them talk to me. Well, you see. There's another importance thing. You run some pre-clears and you find out who could you really talk to, and they will name off the crowned heads or the rulers of Earth. And that's it. You know, they couldn't talk to anybody else. crowned heads and rulers of earth. You ever run into this one? Importance. Well, man, it's all right for him to have this idea, nothing wrong with that, but the number of crowned heads he's talked to recently are zero. You could ask in level three a great number of questions then, which would resolve a great number of problems. You just take the communication formula, including interest, by the way, which is a little bit different than intention, it should be in there. And you would just ask, what is really this, that, or the other thing? What do you think is really a good communication terminal? Tell me a very fine intention that could be used in communication. What kind of an intention could you dream up that would be good for communication, you see? What distance would communication be possible across? And you just improve all of these ideas just on a straight wire base. You take the whole communication formula. What could you really duplicate? In other words, what could you be? Slight difference, but more or less same result. See? And you just take all of these, and you would be able to hit on the head every single aberration that you would face. The individual would all of a sudden give you some wild answer that under old-time processing we would dig an awful long time to come out. He'd give you some wild answer that actually nobody could live with. He thinks it over. Now, what is an intention that's worth talking about? Now, there aren't just any. There's just no intentions. Except maybe, here's his last intention, his last ditch, burning down houses. Now, that's worth talking about. Burning down houses. Yeah, that's a real good intention to talk about. That's a fine one. Gee, you could talk about that for a long time. Yeah, going around, particularly with people in them. The only conversational subject. So valuable that he never talks about it himself until you really ask it. Because you'll ask, is it? Now, conversely, you have an individual spot missingnesses in the communication formula. Spot no intentions, you see, or anything like this. This is not very good, by the way. But it's better than nothing as a process. Spot no intentions, no terminals, see. And above that, of course, no knowingness, which is the subject line of communication. But the oddity is that the terminal and its condition is, for this society at this time, the determining influence of communication. And therefore, this makes the present time problem a body. Now, you take all these considerations about communication, and you find out the body is simply trying too hard to measure up to all of them. And when it gets all the way along the line, it measures up to all of these things, it thinks it succeeded. It couldn't possibly have succeeded all the way, unless it really was able to obtain and receive good communication. So therefore, any level three process which improves any part of the communication formula is, of course, very, very valuable. It's a good process. But terminals are a central fixation in this day and age, and people think of terminals as being the most important thing. They won't talk to you while you're hanging in midair. A suspicion that you are there is not enough for them to suddenly come up and say, hiya, hiya Bill or Joe or Ron, see? Is not sufficient. And this being not sufficient, we get into a very bad condition. People are therefore always trying to adjust these terminals, feeling something is wrong with the terminal. And so today we find people, knowingly or unknowingly, continuously adjusting their reactive banks and ridges because they know something is wrong with the terminal. And that is the present time problem of the preclear. Thank you.